Okay, so I wanted to try to warm you up to connecting to the NIH and give you some research challenges. So I'm going to give you a quick overview of the NIH and how we deal with research and the type of things we try to support, and maybe some hints about how to survive. So as you know, the NIH is the National Institutes of Health. It's about 28 institutes and centers, and it's important for you to start to learn where your natural homes might be. So I would guess that for this crowd, a particular interest would be, first of all, within the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute for Child Health and Human Development, there is our place, the National Center for Medical Rehabilitation Research. Now, up front, let me admit that it is a little bit of an odd fit that a rehab, which goes across the age span, is located in the so-called Child Health Institute, but so be it. So our center was created about 20 years ago to do biomedical, psychosocial, and engineering strategies to improve function and participation for people with chronic disabilities, mostly think physical disabilities, and health services research, and the whole ICF gamut. Now, within our institute, there's also another branch that actually might be connect to some of you folks, is the branch for demographics and behavioral sciences, which promotes research on human populations, demographic change, and health policy research in general, not specifically with disabilities, but populations in general. And there's also another program on intellectual and developmental disabilities. So if you're more in the area of, say, autism or things that are more behavioral or cognitive, that might be a natural home for you as well. Now, that's all within NICHD. There's actually a couple other institutes that you might connect to. The National Institute of Aging. So naturally, if you're dealing with geriatric issues, dementia, balance and falls, frailty, things like that. The Nursing Institute might be a good home for you if you're dealing with things on patient family support, caregiver stress, things like that. And there's also another group called the Office, it's the National Institute for Research in Minority Health. It's promoted from an office. And so if you're dealing with research in health disparities, that might be a home for you. But the take-home lesson from this slide is that medical rehab is located in NICHD. Okay, so that's a primary home, and there are other homes for you as well. And of course, you know, beyond the NIH, as most of you folks know, there's a Center for Disease Control within the Department of Ed. NIDR, the National Institute for Disability and Rehab Research, has been very friendly to the types of issues that you folks are looking at, Agency for Healthcare Quality, Healthcare Research Quality, and Maternal and Child Health. And of course, foundations are a good way for getting pilot studies up and going. So, applying to the NIH. Now, you've got to remember that the majority of funds go to investigator-initiated proposals rather than applications developed in response to initiatives. So if you have a good idea, it's up to you to put it in, defend it, and try to get it funded. Don't wait to see an announcement for your particular approach, condition, disorder, whatever. Funding decisions are really driven by peer review scores. So it's very much peer review driven by you convincing your colleagues on the study sections that your idea is sound. And remember, a top scoring proposal must not only focus on a clinically important issue, but it also has to be intellectually compelling. So if you're just doing a study that shows that more intervention leads to better outcomes, that's a very important clinical issue, but in a way it's not really intellectually compelling, because of course, if you give somebody more attention, more intervention. And as much as you can, in the NIH culture, you really got to present mechanisms and hypotheses. And it doesn't have to be a cellular mechanism. It could be a psychosocial mechanism, a health services mechanism. But talk mechanisms, talk logic. Pilot data always helps. It shows the feasibility of your approach. It shows your commitment. NIH has three annual cycles per year. From submission to funding, it's a little bit of a slow process. It takes at least 9 months, and you may have to revise and take even longer. And you really only get two chances for any given proposal. And what that means is you really got to optimize that proposal, have colleagues, senior colleagues, people who know NIH, look at it before you submit it. Don't submit it until it's your best possible proposal, because you only get two chances, and don't depend on the peer review system to correct it and tell you where to go. You got to put all your guesses, all your gut instincts in there at the first time through. Very quickly, to just summarize the way that we deal out the money. We have a bunch of career development mechanisms. So for those of you that want to seek mentored support at the early stages before you've quite gone independent, There's a K99ROO to help you turn the corner. If you're a particular, if you happen to be a therapist or a clinician, there are some special mechanisms that might support you to work with a mentor at that point. As we get into the research grant mechanisms, the big time grant, the granddaddy grant, is the R01. That's where you have a big time idea, and it's up to a 5-year grant. And the budget is really driven by what you're proposing. So it could be several hundred thousand dollars per year. Below that, we have two other grants that are kind of they're both 2-year grants. If you're looking for pilot research, there's the R03. And if you're trying to do something that's kind of innovative, pushing the envelope, there's another mechanism called an R21. If you're doing clinical trials, there's actually a clinical trial planning grant, not to get the preliminary data so much as to help you get your research team, your protocol, to show that your group can play together. So if you need a 1-year grant to help you for the administrative stuff, that's there. And since some of what we do in rehab is gets into the realm of small business, there's actually mechanisms to promote product development, even if it's an education package, some sort of a product. It could be a device. And if you're an institution that's not a big-time NIH recipient, you're more of an undergraduate institution, there are these area grants that might be a possibility. Oh, by the way, I did leave two handouts by the door on the way out. So if you get bored and you want to head out, they're there for your taking. Okay, so some special considerations for rehab research. You always got to think about what's really the active ingredient in the treatment. And I think in the preceding three talks, you really got to see the sense of how people figured out what really is the key driving thing in what they're doing. And then how do you isolate it? And then setting up the proper contrast groups or control arms. Because just contrasting it with normal treatment is really lack of treatment, and that's kind of shooting fish in a barrel. These days it's not really an appropriate contrast group anymore. And you got to account for environmental factors, especially in rehab. These environmental factors can be barriers, they can be block negative factors, or they can be supportive factors. You have a good community, a good home, family is really supportive, that can be a positive. And so in rehab, we got to think a little about environmental factors, how they figure into the treatments. And that what people are doing outside activities, beyond the 2 hours a week they're coming into your clinics, that also is going to affect outcomes. So you really should be thinking about how much you're also affecting their lives and changing things on that level as well. And that they might be seeking concurrent treatments beyond that. And whatever you're proposing, you got to think about, it has to be realistic within the current healthcare constraints. It's no use designing a souped-up Cadillac if the reality is people are not going to be able to get that reimbursed. So you got to give that some thought. In NIH, you really got to go beyond merely associative links and confirmatory results. You really got to seek a causative relationship. And as I said before, you want to develop hypotheses, predictions, mechanisms. And you're always looking for opportunities to control and isolate your variables. And you want to think about showing something that's not just statistically significant, but really is clinically significant, impacting somebody's life, allowing them to do something they could not do before. And I just want to highlight three particular topics, the first one being secondary conditions. The fact that because somebody has disuse, they might get muscle atrophy, they might get their musculoskeletal system, they might have osteoporosis, they might have skin ulcers. Because they're deconditioned, they might be suffering from obesity, fatigue. They might have increased falls and injuries. Because of their disability, they might have increased susceptibility to infection. They're on behavioral and psychosocial declines. They have increased morbidity and mortality, increased recurrence risk. And so all this is a sense of that people sometimes fall in these negative spirals. And you have to think about that process. And maybe you can come up with an intervention that actually puts them on a positive spiral. You get them inspired, you get them out there, they're feeling better. And because of that, they're exercising more. Because exercising more, they're losing weight. Because they're losing weight, they can move further, their joints are less affected, they're fatigued, their endurance is better. So you get people in a positive spiral. I want to put a certain word in for children and the developing brain, that children have increased vulnerability, but also increased potential for plasticity and recovery. Children are on a steep growth trajectory. They have a rapidly changing physical and behavioral repertoire. Children tend to be more dependent on their environment support, whether it's family or the environment beyond that. Children react differently to trauma, both physically, psychologically, and emotionally. Children have unique sensitivity, pharmacological, and other therapeutic approaches. And a certain disorder, a certain condition they have, may impede their interaction with the environment, and they may miss critical developmental windows, which are important for what kids go through in life. And finally, I want to make a obviously stress assessment and outcome issues. The importance of working across the ICF domains of not just pathology, not just function, and not just disability, but try to have your studies go at least over two of those. We always need to have improved diagnostic and prognostic measures, which patients will benefit by which procedures, and to have prognostic measures to show that patients are really improving and it's going to be sustainable. We need better ways to assess function and disability. We need for ways to measure participation and participation in the various environments of family, community, employment, education, recreation. We want to look at ways to monitor healthcare utilization and other policy issues. We're looking for quality of life measures. And sometimes we have to reconcile the needs of the patient with those of the family, of the caretaker, and or the clinician, and that those goals and expectations may change with time. And again, we want to have something that's going to function within the constraints of the real-world constraints of health policy, of healthcare and policy issues. And NIH, you probably heard that NIH has particular fondness now for comparative effectiveness research, so that should be particularly connected to what you folks are doing. Just to mention some research, some recent research initiatives to show that we're trying to think about you and what you folks are doing, I try to grab a few initiatives that might be particularly of interest to this crowd. We have a recent, we currently have one out there on the streets now on developing an evidence base to support health promotion through physical activity and diet in children with disabilities. All children are having problems with obesity and inactivity. Particularly kids with disabilities, that extra weight, that inactivity is really a tough thing for them. So might we have particular angles, approaches that we could get through to these kids that would be unique, that would be special for this population? So we wanted to stir up research in that area, strategies for promoting their activity, their diet, their nutrition, their health. Another initiative is one on predictive multi-scale models for behavioral, biological, behavioral, environmental, and clinical research. We have an initiative for design and development of novel healthy strategies, novel healthy technologies for healthy independent living to allow people, say, people who are aging, to allow them to exist in their home environment independent for longer and longer by having technologies to help monitor, to help support them. We have an initiative on translating basic behavior and social science discoveries into interventions. An initiative to promote meetings, conferences, and networks for research partnerships. And one that's specific, and the final one specifically, outcomes research in prosthetics and orthotics. And I want to highlight that at NIH, you're encouraged to talk to us. One way is you can look through the websites of the various NIH institutes and to try to identify the appropriate program officials, such as myself or Louis Petrano, my colleague is probably most connected to what some of you folks are doing. And contact that person. A nice way to contact a program official, we might be busy, but a nice instruction is to email us your abstract and your specific aims pages. You know, by showing us your specific aim, it shows that you've really thought about it in terms of hypotheses, in terms of aims, that you really understand research, and allows us to instantaneously connect with you and see where you're going. And you can discuss potential research mechanisms, you can discuss funding initiatives, study section assignments. That's kind of our job. And if you happen to try to contact the program official and you don't quickly get a response, you know, maybe there are some few people that may be too busy or not don't have great people skills. Try somebody else, because NIH program officials should try to help you out and contact and connect with you. After you get a peer review back, we can also help you interpret the summary statement, read between the lines. What's your likelihood of funding? Where do you go from here? But remember that the funding decisions are really driven by you getting the best possible score. So don't try to schmooze us. It's not, you know, don't try to sell us, don't you care about this? This is important research. It's really up to you getting the top score so we can then reach and fund your grant. And I should also mention, particularly good time for new investigators. NIH is trying to bend some of the funding and to, you know, give certain breaks for people to get their first R01 grant. Finally, Alan Jetty already highlighted these national networks that we're having for medical rehab. And so for those of you that are out there doing research, some of these might really help you extend your grasp, things that you can't really create in your own labs, but you're trying to access a certain technology. So they're offering state-of-the-art research. They're connecting to you through courses and workshops. They offer great opportunities for mentorship and consultations. Alan also hinted they even have a little bit of pilot grants to kind of help you get some key data maybe, and other opportunities. You can connect to all seven of them, and I'm going to highlight all seven in just a second, by using www.ncmrr, as in National Center for Medical Rehabilitation Research, .org. So that'll connect you to all seven. And the seven, in roughly ICF order, are molecular genetic and proteomic studies, down to muscle physiology, if you're doing stuff on modeling and movement as a center, if you're doing work in bioengineering robotics, if you're doing technology assessment, product development, commercialization. But particularly the last two, I think, would be most important for this group. Alan's center that helps you with outcomes research, and Ken Ottenbacher has a center on analysis of large data sets, health services kind of research. All right? So in the interest of time, I think I'll stop there. And should we bring the panel back up? And